Chris, the conditions down there are no different today than they were in January of this year, and we've had multiples and multiples of people coming across the border. So it's not the conditions down there that have caused the current crisis at the border. It is the policies of the Biden administration. We knew how to make it work. I negotiated, remained in Mexico. We convinced the Mexicans and the Central American countries this was in their best interest as well. Don't take my word for it. This week, the Mexican leadership and the Guatemalan leadership said this problem is a direct result of Team Biden's foreign policy.
It is, and the flood of humanity headed this way. That's the Biden border mess, as I refer to it. Welcome to the Dana Show for a Monday. My name is Sergio Sanchez, and always honored to fill in for my friend Dana. Dana Lash, she's in North Texas, along with Chris and my brother Sugarcane and all the crew up there. I'm in deep South Texas, still in Texas, still in blessed soil. And it's always an honor that you join us on the Dana Show. If at any point you want to chime in or join us, you got to make it by producer Steve at 844-344-DANA. That's Mike Pompeo on the border crisis. Yeah, this is the land of the border crisis. We have had at least a few networks have done the responsible thing. They continue to send some reporters down here to cover the continuing, it's, you know, continuous coverage of the with the Biden border mess. And, you know, you got people from Fox and some of the conservative networks and some of the conservative, you know, online publications. This crisis did not exist. This flood of humanity, it was, what was it, 180,000 people this past month. The previous month was 178,000 more people, illegal immigrants. And now if, you know, I know you're working for a living, you're trying to keep up with all this. And I know thanks to, you know, ABC, CBS, and, you know, NBC, the other networks really not shining a light. It is the biggest problem in our country. It is in my backyard here in deep South Texas, right here on the U.S.-Mexican border. I keep mentioning this because, look, I'm convinced that as a nation, if we laser focused on this massive problem, I think we could fix it. The problem is that we're so distracted by so many moving parts. My goodness, it seems like every newscast, which is generally about, what is it? I mean, you guys would take the full newscast from the networks, whether it's, you know, CBS or whatever. It's 5 minutes. And you've got like 20 spinning plates in that five-minute report. We desperately need to a little less, you know, ADD and a little bit more like focus on that one problem, which is illegal immigration. I know if this wonderful nation of ours can find it within us to, I don't know, beat the Nazis, set up a nuclear lab in the Southwest and make an atomic bomb, you know, end World War II, you know, if we can find it within us to send men to the moon, you know, all those things. If we laser focus on one big issue, I think we can solve the whole immigration problem. We didn't have the floods of hundreds of thousands of human beings. And they're still coming, amigo. On this day, you know, for you, it's whatever it is that you're doing across this beautiful country of ours today. You don't see, you know, it's out of sight, it's out of mind. You don't see my friends at Border Patrol just down the street from me, just a few miles south for this radio station, this proud Dana affiliate, KURV here in South Texas. You don't see the, you know, the hundreds of Border Patrol just doing the best they can, just kind of muddling and getting by, doing a little paperwork thing and babysitting thing for all these illegal immigrants crossing the border and coming here to stay. And pretty soon they'll be changing up some rules related to individuals that would be normally sent back. You know, folks who don't show up with a kid or don't rent a kid and show up to my border, they're still being sent back for, you know, Title 42, they call it. It was exercised during the Trump administration. Now, aside from family units, which would be a parent or an individual who claims to be a parent of a kid, or maybe families, or maybe kids coming on their own, children that are being subjected to Lord knows, you know, what abuse. And I don't even want to think about it, you know, assault and sexual assault. It was just these cartels and these people smugglers. Well, they're the ones who cross these illegal immigrants, the kids on their own, the family units. They stay. They're here to stay. Look, of the 178,000 that crossed illegally 2 months ago, overwhelming majority of those stayed. 180,000 that crossed last month, overwhelming majority of those stayed. And now the individuals who came on their own and still are subject to this Title 42 health-related COVID thing that, as Mike Pompeo said at the beginning, cut. Negotiated with the Mexican president, AMLO, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, and Central American presidents. They negotiated the return of everyone south of the border. Well, now the family units and the kids stay, and these individuals who are at present still being sent back. Come a few days from now, like 10, 15 days from now, like late June, even those individuals, the people who came on their own, they'll be coming here saying something that's been coached. You know, they've been coached to say credible fear. Of course, they won't say it. Don't probably won't say it that cleanly, but they'll say credible fear. They'll be able to say it. Everybody will get saved now. It is the Biden policy. It's the Biden administration. It's the campaign language. It is the magnet that is sucking up all these folks up from Central America to come here as quickly as they can because the door is wide open. It's like I look at all these reports from Border Patrol, and it reminds me of, you know, you guys remember pre-pandemic, the Black Friday sales, like at Walmart and Target and all these places, all these people like standing outside the door, and then they open up the doors and it's humanity like trampling over each other, trying to get in there to get cheap television, toasters and vacuum cleaners, whatever. It's just the massive humanity coming. That's what it is. Under the Biden administration, that's what it is. It's like Black Friday for immigration at the moment. People coming in as quickly as possible before the doors close again. You see, folks in Central America who, they just want a better way of life. I mean, you do. I do. We're blessed that in this one life that we live, I believe we just live one life in this universe. You and I are American citizens, and we live in the greatest country on the planet, period. We live in a country that is as free, practices the ideas of liberty as much as possible, especially when it comes to market activity for an individual to has an idea, has a service, has a skill, can market that, can sell that, provide for himself and his family, and Lord only knows, and maybe become a millionaire, a billionaire, if the individual has a great idea and is able to franchise ideas and sell patents and all that. That's America. They realize that in Central America. And they want to get here as quickly as possible while the door's open. It's a fire sale. It's a Black Friday opportunity when it comes to immigration. They don't have the right to stay here. It is the Biden administration that's sucking all these people up. And it is the Supreme Court just a few days back. You guys recall? You guys were paying attention to the news just a few days back. It was the Supreme Court who, you know, you talk about a story that should be top of the hour. The fact that the High Court unanimously said, no, you cross the border illegally. You come into this country illegally. You have no right to a green card. Yes, I know there was a hurricane. Yes, I know there was an earthquake. Yes, I know that in Syria you got nasty civil war and death and mayhem, and in Africa same thing. But you came here and you received a temporary protected status. That doesn't give you the right. You have no right to get a green card. And then there was no wiggle room for Chief Justice John Roberts to improvise. Well, let me see here. Maybe we can call. There was no wiggle room for him to say, well, let's call a tax. And Congress actually meant to call a tax in Obamacare. He can't do that with immigration law. Immigration law is so tight. And see, this is where the legislative session, this is where the lawmakers need to fix this. Immigration law is so tight in our country. You cross the border illegally, you forfeit the right to a green card. Ain't no two ways about it. There ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And see, it's Congress that can fix the situation. And the High Court unanimously. Ain't that something? It was Justice Kagan, probably the most liberal. They put her out there to write for the court that no one has a right to a green card. It's the lawmakers that need to fix this. And anyway, we could talk immigration all day long, but and I heard that cut from Dana at the show open, the credits. All these lawmakers come to the border, say, I've gone 3-4 times. Yeah, that's great. The problem is, it's the lawmakers that need to fix it. It's the lawmakers. I wish that the lawmakers who probably are still visiting the Texas-Mexico border somewhere, maybe El Paso, San Diego, they're out there somewhere during their tours, because it seems they're always taking a break up in D.C., not actually addressing the real problems, the real issues. I wish that on the conservative side, I wish that on the America first side, Americans first side, you know, it would otherwise be called Republicans. I wish that they had the courage up in D.C., just like the Democrats do. Democrats are really, really good lockstep, goose step. They lock arms, and they're always pointing extending a shaky finger of blame over to the Republicans, how xenophobic and hateful and divisive they are, and how ineffective they are. I wish we had some courageous Republicans and conservatives up in D.C. that did the same, don't you? Go back to the Democrats and say, immigration law has been broken. And take responsibility. We've had too many noodle-spined Republicans through the years. We've had too many individuals that want open borders for political reasons, that they benefit from this class of individuals that will be, God forbid, but unfortunately may become completely dependent on government assistance. There you go. You got your new voting base that's dependent on the paternal state. Well, that's the last thing that we need. We don't want that for our country. It's the Democrats. It's their fault. Democrats need to join us if they wish to fix the border mess, the Biden border mess. Point a finger of blame at Biden again constantly. We went, but it's Biden's fault. It's the Democrats' fault. And you guys on TV, you guys need to focus on that. I even floated just a crazy suggestion the other day. I don't even know I was filling in for Dana. I must have been like a couple weeks back. You know, for Democrats, for whatever reason, they always suggested impeaching President Trump for this, that, and the other. A bunch of lies. But you know, they just generated a bunch of lies and falsehoods and for no reason. We have a president right now that is skirting U.S. law. We have a president right now that's not enforcing U.S. border law. We have a president that is encouraging this criminal behavior, a president whose suggestions on open borders has actually profiting the cartels. $5 billion, they say, that the cartels have made so far with all this human trafficking, human cattle. To them, for the cartels, every head represents several hundreds and thousands of dollars. So who in the Republican Party, who in leadership, maybe a pundit somewhere out there, why is nobody saying we should consider impeaching President Joe Biden? Start that debate. Start the panels of conversations on the cable networks. You know, all the lefties and Biden's sycophants, they can guffaw and complain, but at least the conversation continues and then eventually get to, you know, we know what the root causes are. How about the root solution? It has to be legislative. You got to fix it in Congress. That's the only fix to this. 20 minutes after the hour, you're listening to The Dana Show for a Monday. My name is Sergio Sanchez, in with you this week. Get some rest, Dana. This is The Dana Show.
Shooting down woke culture,
one crazy headline at a time.
It's The Dana Show.
Democrats literally don't have one vote to spare. And you read that from Joe Manchin. How are you going to get it passed?
I don't give up on Joe Manchin. When he was governor and secretary of state in West Virginia, he initiated many of the ideas that are in the H.R. 1, S.1, mm-hmm. the For the People Act, the For the People. And it's not as necessarily a rewriting. It's stopping.
Not necessarily. You know, that's Nancy Pelosi. And she's just doing what she's really good at, which is, you know, capturing those little sound bites and poking you right, you know, taking her fingers and poking you right in the eye, poking working people and the electorate right in the eye. Rewrite. Absolutely. H.R. 1, many of us have been referring to the federalization of elections in our country and our Constitution. It's the states. It's you, amigo. Oh, by the way, welcome to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez in for Dana this week. Hope Dana gets some much needed rest. And if you want to join the program, you make it by Steve. You can call in at 844-344-DANA. HR 1, it's federalization of election processes that by our Constitution are supposed to be done by you, amigo, by the state, at the local level. That's what I've been telling you for the longest time. You need to get in there. You need to understand, volunteer, work. They pay you. They can pay you per hour. Work at the elections office. Understand how elections are run. You know, we don't need mail-in ballots for all. We do need to clean up voter rolls nationwide. We do not need the federal government telling states how they're going to be running elections. And Joe Manchin, he's got a reading. He's taking the temperature of the American people in this and his people in West Virginia. There will be no federalization of election processes under Joe Manchin. Because if Joe Manchin says yes, they still need to vote for 60 votes in the Senate to move that crazy HR 1 idea forward. All right, Steve, well, let's do some headlines.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
All right, here. Multiple reports, FDA, Food and Drug Administration, Johnson & Johnson, they need to throw out about 60 million doses of their COVID vaccine. It was produced at a lab in Baltimore that raised some questions. We now know the cost of a ticket to ride on a rocket to space, $28 million. That was the winning bid to join billionaire Jeff Bezos and his brother on the maiden voyage of Blue Origin. From South Texas, I lovingly refer to it as the Dana Show Southern Command. I'm Sergio Sanchez. This is the Dana Show.
The border crisis is not only endangering our national security, but it is greatly empowering adversaries like communist China and Russia. I'm Sarah Carter. On the latest Sarah Carter Show, I'll also tell you about my interview with the president of Guatemala. And Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany joins me to discuss what he learned about the crisis from his recent visit to the dangerous Darien Gap in Panama. You don't want to miss it. Subscribe to the Sarah Carter Show at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dana gives you the meat and potatoes news of the day. None of that tofu news. More like bacon with a side of hash browns news. The news you want, the way you want it. The Dana Show.
We have the influence of big money that impacts not just one party, but both parties in the United States Congress. And I do believe that that old way of politics has absolutely an influence in Joe Manchin's thinking and the way he navigates the body. I mean, the things that he cites, like this, I think, romanticism of a bipartisanship is about an era of Republicans that simply do not exist anymore.
The old way is bipartisanship, or, you know, perceived bipartisanship. In other words, you surrender a little bit of yours and pick up a little bit of mine and vice versa type of thing. And that's obviously AOC. That's one of the more recognizable voices in politics. Unfortunately. Speaking of voices, I'm not Dana. My name is Sergio Sanchez. And this is the Dana Show, and we truly appreciate you tuning in. Now, if you want to chime in, say something, 844-344-DANA is the phone number. You make it by producer Steve. You make it on the radio. Say for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for AOC, it's her way or the highway, and her way is the only way, and that's the way, you know, tyrants think. That's the way the iron-fisted government types think. It's control, and that's the mindset of many. It's not only individuals on the left. It could be individuals on the right. It doesn't matter. It's individuals who think that government has the best answers. Government has the solutions. Government should be the decision maker. Government should control goods, should control prices, should control everything. It's the tyrannical mindset of little tyrants like AOC, you know, the romanticism of bipartisanship in an era that's gone. Oh, thank God it's still here. Because as I mentioned right before the break, I was talking about Nancy Pelosi, and you know, she's thinking, you know, she's not giving up on Joe Manchin, supporting the federalization of of elections in our country. That's a state function by our constitution, by our law. It's the states that are supposed to be running. That's why we have a patchwork of inconsistent and different laws. We have some communities that are really good about purging their voter rolls from dead people, taking all dead people out, making sure that they don't register illegal immigrants, let's say at the DMV. You know, it's every state runs things differently. And that's why we must as a nation, if we hope to preserve our nation, we must push forward with election reforms. And let me go back to what I was telling you earlier. Let me get preachy with you again. You patriot, I know you're working for a living, but if there's any hope of saving our nation, you need to get in there. You need to go work elections. You, whatever it is that you do for a living, maybe take a few days off, help run election day, get trained on a weekend, go work the polls, go understand how they open up the mail-in vote, how it all gets counted, how they canvass, how they report, all that stuff. That's the basics of baseball. And AOC, you know, thank God that there is some type of bipartisanship effort up in, number one, Joe Manchin. Yes, he's old school, but that's the way we do things in Washington. We're not supposed to move like crazy people, you know, like a herd stampede in one political direction. Our founding fathers were smart enough to put all these controls and these stops and these hurdles to make sure that the government plods along slowly, methodically, in agreement. If it's good for the nation, we will all agree that it's good for our nation to protect our nation, to protect our interests. If it's not, then we will just bicker and fight all the time up in Washington. That's the way it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be just one way or the highway. Let's see what else is here. I need to mention this, otherwise I'm going to forget this. I know there's probably several affiliates out there since this young man, 45 years old, 45 years young. Now, if you've been paying attention to, you know, all the online write-ups, and Christopher Sine is his name, former University of Alabama football player, Dallas native, veteran news guy, a TV anchor, I mean, from Alabama to Arizona, had, again, Texas roots, obviously loved and respected by many people. He was an award-winning journalist, and, you know, our condolences out to friends and family of his. I didn't personally know him, but, you know, just from a distance, like, I know many of y'all were watching with great interest. What the story, the signature story of his that's being mentioned is, you know, he was the reporter. Christopher Sine was a reporter who broke the story of, remember Slick Willie, Bill Clinton, at the airport, at the tarmac, a meeting with Loretta Lynch. It was like right before the campaign, and there was all this speculation, like, what did Bill Clinton tell Loretta Lynch, the then attorney general, about investigating, not investigating, or ignoring a certain Clinton investigations or emails or, you know, things like that, right? Like right before, you know, during the election season. Well, that was his story. It was Clinton on the tarmac with the then Attorney General Loretta Lynch. And he had more great work that he did. But anyway, he passed away. And they say he committed suicide at age 45. And may God give his friends and family peace. Something for the Gulf Coast, Gulf of Mexico, from Texas, Louisiana, Florida, everybody on the Gulf Coast, we're watching the tropics. And they say it's going to be a very busy tropical season this year. And we got the Weather Service looking at something. I refer to it as the tropical cradle, the Bay of Campeche, or as my güeritos, my white reporter friends would say, Bay of Campeche, just south of us, south of the tip of Texas, south of Texas, there it is, Bay of Campeche. And we might have a tropical system, a little bit of rain, just something to watch. The conversation I had with friends were in meteorology. They're saying they're not expecting any big storm to come of this. There's another one that's off the Carolinas. So you guys are up in the Carolinas. There's another one that might skirt the coast and provide some rain northeast, if at all, if it just skirts the coast, but something to watch on the weather side. Stay tuned for a local weather news on that one, wherever you are. YouTube banning Wisconsin Republican U.S. Senator suspending Senator Johnson for 7 days for violating their medical misinformation policy. So on YouTube, the snowflake so-called fact checkers are still hard at work out there. They're policing words like hydroxychloroquine. And anytime the issue of COVID-19 pops up, well, they're policing. This time they went after Wisconsin Republican Senator Johnson, U.S. Senator Johnson, because he mentioned in a video something about hydroxychloroquine and using cheaper drugs to treat the coronavirus. Senator Johnson has been booted from YouTube for 7 days. They say YouTube policy prohibits videos that mention any kinds of treatments, alternative or cheaper treatments. And you know, you should know this because Senator Johnson rightfully saying, you know, this suspension showing that YouTube, and may I add, just hitch the wagon for Twitter and Facebook and everybody else, the social media giants, they got way too much power and they monopolize way too much of this conversation, which begs the question again. I saw an article last week, another write-up, that Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump, was thinking of starting up a social media platform. Well, hello, Mr. President. Let's get it done. Come on, sir. We need a little bit of competition. And I don't know, just a suggestion. If and when President Trump and some billionaire amigos like-minded who, you know, may not think like him politically, but believe in true free speech and believe in a market that truly expresses free thought and is not going to be suppressing and policing all these things. Well, let's get it done. Let's go up there. And all you guys have, you know, I know I would, of course, I don't have any skin in the game. So I'm a nobody. I only have a few people here and there. I hate social media, but I have to use it because that's the lifeboat for all modern media. It's social media, Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. But my suggestion would be if and when Donald Trump and billionaire amigos actually do create a social media platform, I suggest close your accounts, hop on over, and especially you guys in policy and politicians, close everything out and force the market and the media to come to the new platform to see the press releases and everything that you have to say. Let me see, pandemic, COVID-19. Here it is. Here's a story I want to share with you. Federal judge in Houston has dismissed a lawsuit for about 170 some odd employees, Houston Medical System, the Houston Methodist Medical System. The hospital workers had been told that they must be vaccinated to keep their job. And they brought a lawsuit against Houston Methodist. They said the federal law prohibits employees from being required to receive a vaccination and injection. Anyway, they've lost round one. I had a chance to toss this around with a friend of mine who I call for comments on this. He's a doctor. He's you got the cut, Steve. I'm sorry. I wanted to confirm with you, make sure that you had the cut from the colonel. All right. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Michael Lewis. He's a doctor. I just toss this issue around with him real quick. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, you know, there's one of the things that is kind of curious is this whole concept of employers requiring vaccination status and stuff. It seems to me that when this whole COVID thing, we have just thrown all the rules out, whether it's the American Disabilities Act or HIPAA laws, you know, privacy laws of medical information. It seems like all that's been thrown out the window. And so I think there's going to be a backlash to that at some point. The pendulum's going to swing. And, you know, we've got to learn. I mean, we are in America. We're not in, some communist country where you can mandate all these things. We have individual freedoms and rights. And I think that we've been willing, I think, as Ben Franklin said, those who would give up a little bit of freedom to feel safe deserve neither. And so that's one of the things we're going to have to learn how to balance is the individual versus the bigger picture.
The Methodist medical system out of Houston that was in the news, 100 plus employees who pushed back and said, no, we don't want this vaccine. You surprised that the court threw it out? I know it's on appeal, but they lost first round.
Well, it's, you know, that's the thing. It's A, you can argue it's not even a vaccine, at least when you're talking about the mRNA ones. They're not what we know as traditional vaccines. It's certainly new technology, which is actually really exciting that we had this leap in technology that's made all of this possible. That's number one, is that is it really a vaccine classified according to the FDA? And it's still experimental. And can employers actually require people to have to take experimental modalities? And I actually surprised that the court said yes. I'm a little bit surprised by that.
Especially, now, as you said, because of its experimental status at the moment. That's
it is experimental
emergency
status.
Use status.
Yeah. I think if it were fully fully vetted by the FDA, if fully approved, I think that the employees would have much less leg to stand on.
Doctor, the Colonel, as always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Retired Colonel, U.S. Army, Michael Lewis.
It's the right to work, protections and rights for the employer. Private employer, the Houston Methodist Medical System. And, of course, the individual in what he, she can be told to do, not to do. So very interesting case moving, right to work case moving out of Houston right now. You are listening to The Dana Show from what I refer to as her Southern Command, the offices of KURV News Talk in McAllen, Brownsville. You may have heard those terms in the news every now and then. Yeah, McAllen. Yeah, it's the center point, focal point of all this illegal immigration. We got hundreds of thousands of people crossing the border every single month, and they seem to like this area a lot, this entry point. Brownsville at the coast. Yeah, Elon Musk, SpaceX, and the little private spaceport. Yeah, that's it. You're listening to The Dana Show. You're welcome to join the conversation. 844-344-3262. I'm Sergio Sanchez in this week for Dana Lash.
This year, Kel-Tec is celebrating 30 years of game-changing innovation and performance. A privately owned family company that began making one-of-a-kind American-made firearms in 1995. In 1999, Kel-Tec launched their brand on the scene by forever redefining the concealed carry handgun. And from that point on, Kel-Tec continues to innovate and create never-before-seen firearms, pistols, rifles, and shotguns alike, never copying firearms, always innovating new ones. Kel-Tec believes in respect, family, the right to bear arms, and in the love we all have for our great country. They do things right. All Kel-Tec firearms are proudly made right here in America in a true family culture that embraces every employee and where people are genuinely happy to come to work. The Kel-Tec's commitment to innovation and quality truly sets them apart. Find out more about Kel-Tec firearms by visiting KelTecWeapons.com for a deeper dive on all aspects of their innovative firearms. That's KelTecWeapons.com to learn more about my friends at Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec, game-changing innovation and performance.
Want a behind-the-scenes look at The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana's Chapter and Verse newsletter for a deeper dive in all things Dana at DanaLash.com.
This is The Dana Show from her Southern Command, as I refer to it, the studios of KURV in South Texas. Appreciate you tuning in today. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and for my friend Dana Lash all week long, and appreciate you checking in. If you want to do the Facebook thing, it's Sergio Sanchez on Facebook. I know there's a lot of Sergio Sanchez's out there, but there's like, and the porthole, you know, it's on Facebook, on the porthole. I mentioned something about cystic fibrosis. I got a couple of pages out there. That's one. On Twitter, it's at Sergio Talk. And again, I'm hoping and praying that our friend, former President Donald Trump, takes billionaire amigos and creates some true competition for social media, because, man, we definitely need that. All right. So it looks like the U.S.-Canadian border is going to be closed. The Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, he's not happy with the vaccination rates in his country. Where are we right now here in the U.S.? We're about, I heard of this, we're at like 40-some-odd percent, right? Fully vaccinated in our country. I don't think, well, most everybody thinks we're not going to hit the 70% vaccination rate nationwide that Joe Biden wanted to hit by July 4th. But I can tell you that from my perspective here on the U.S.-Mexican border, you see, commerce with Mexico, you know, for us here in Deep South Texas, commerce is part of the retail economy, business economy. Every single day, if you guys didn't know this about multinational firms that set up immediately south of the border in the industrial heart of Mexico, west of me in Monterrey, Mexico, south of you. We have U.S.-based managers and company owners, and they, you know, whatever the commute is like for you in Indianapolis or in Cleveland or, you know, wherever it is that you're listening, L.A., Dallas, the daily commute around here is to get on the international bridges, go south of the border, manage and run those companies, and then come on back and, you know, do the wait time, 1 hour, 2 hour wait time, come back to the U.S. Now, they have access all the time, but then in Mexico, those that have a lot of expendable income, there's several of them. I mean, go figure, in Mexico, 10, 20% of the population is really stinking rich. I mean, they're really rich. I mean, they keep talking about they corner the market on the pesos, the money down there. Well, they got money to spend. They come over here in buses. We haven't seen those nice people come to, you know, Brownsville, McAllen, come shopping. So we kind of miss those dollars. We miss those pesos they convert to dollars up in the U.S.-Canadian border. I imagine it's the same, right? You guys depend on a lot of Canadian shoppers come back and forth. U.S.-Canadian border going to stay closed. Justin Trudeau not happy with the vaccination rates. And there was some talk that maybe they might open a little bit for all the people who were vaccinated. All that fell apart. And I mentioned this too because U.S. and Canada and U.S. and Mexico, yeah, that ain't going to happen. They're not going to open up a border anytime soon. At least not for this month. We might have to wait one more month for that. June 14th, this Monday, it's National Flag Day, our time to honor Old Glory. I saw a little write-up on this. You know, our flag has been modified 26 times in its history. It's National Flag Day, so fly it with some pride. And it's also, I believe it's the Army's birthday. The United States Army's birthday is today. From South Texas, I'm Sergio Sanchez. This is The Dana Show.
Now more than ever, it's vital to support companies and organizations that share your values. And Patriot Mobile is calling all patriots. Switch to Patriot Mobile today. Bring your own phone and you'll get 50% off your first 2 months plus a free Patriot starter kit. And for a limited time, enter the Be a Patriot promotion to win a free phone and cellular service for life. Simply donate to one of Patriot Mobile's participating charities. Send in your thoughts on what it means to be a patriot or switch your service to a Patriot Mobile plan. With the broadest nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget and great multi-line discounts. Switching is easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call their U.S.-based customer service team at 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. Veterans and first responders save even more, so make the switch today. Get the discount, free starter kit, and enter the Be a Patriot promotion for a chance to win using the offer code DANA. A full list of rules is available at patriotmobile.com/Dana. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT.
Accusations.
Russian-speaking criminals is the allegation, are targeting the American way of life, food, gas, water, hospitals, transport. Why would you let Russian-speaking criminals disrupt your diplomacy?
You know, the simplest thing to do would be for us to sit down calmly and agree on joint work in cyberspace. We are willing to engage with international participants, including the United States. You are the ones who have refused to engage in joint work.
Ouch. Vladimir Putin. We're all still friends, right? Welcome to Hour 2, Monday edition of The Dana Show. My name is Sergio Sanchez, and we're broadcasting this week from the Dana Show Southern Command, Rio Grande Valley of Texas, front line of news, man. I guess that's why Dana chooses us. Might as well go to a place that news is happening every single day. Yeah, I know the world's not reporting it necessarily the way they should, but every single day we got thousands and thousands of people crossing the border illegally. We got some other positive news taking place locally, thanks to Elon Musk and SpaceX. And, you know, the little rockets testing over there in Brownsville, Texas. Yeah, that's where I'm at. And this is The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez. If you want to join the conversation, it's 844-344-DANA. Yeah, Russian President Vladimir Putin. He says that Russia is prepared to extradite some of these cyber criminals to our country if Joe Biden
agrees to extradite Americans accused of cyber crimes to Russia. All right. Now, have you noticed that in all this, all these conversations about infrastructure spending, guys, have any of y'all heard any commentary, any, I don't know, CNN, MSNBC, whatever, CNBC, has any of these networks put a round table of, you know, so-called experts, some of these eggheads and these computer nerds and saying, look, we need to emphasize cybersecurity. We've had water systems that have been compromised already by hackers. We've had school districts that have their data has been held hostage by cyber terrorists and cyber hackers and ransomware. We had, a major pipeline from Houston up to New Jersey, and the gasoline supply was affected for all these southern states and East Coast states. We have a power grid. God forbid. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine? Man, I don't even want to say it. But I think you know where I'm going. You know, let me just say power grid and cyber criminals. I'll leave it at that. In the middle of a hot summer with, you know, 110 degree weather in the Southwest Arizona. How you doing? You guys in Arizona, Las Vegas as well, Nevada. Here in Texas, it gets well above 100 as well. God forbid. You thought it was scary here in for the Texas affiliates. You guys thought it was scary that we lost power. We almost lost the entire grid back during the big freeze back in February. Can you imagine losing in the middle of summer? No, that's it. And they say, I was reading a business story earlier this morning, that our power grid, our electrical systems, our distribution systems, we're vulnerable. If these water systems and school districts and petrol pipelines are vulnerable to these cyber hackers, our power grid is as well. Forget a microburst, one of those little nuclear microburst sent above us to take down the grid. The cyber terrorists can do that from a distance from Russia. They can do it from overseas and take us out and disconnect the air conditioner for a week, and Lord knows how many people that's going to affect. I haven't seen a single panel sit down and start brainstorming how all these tens of millions and hundreds of millions and billions of dollars in so-called infrastructure spending, how you boys, and I don't even think the lawmakers up in D.C. know where to spend the money. They could probably just, you know, the snap of a finger say, okay, let's write up some IOUs, snap. Let's have a Chi-Coms, a Chinese communist, and buy up all these IOUs, snap. Okay, now we got capital. Who's gonna fix this information technology that affects the power grids and the oil pipelines and the water systems and everything else, and are gonna protect us? You know, infrastructure, real. See, the new infrastructure that should be debated up in D.C., it's not daycare. It's not elderly care. It's not human beings. It's the fact that human beings are vulnerable, especially human beings in this country. We are vulnerable because we don't have enough expertise and defense systems in information technology. The information superhighway that should be at this moment, considering how we're all interconnected, the information superhighway should be more important than the interstate highway. I'm not saying that we don't spend any money on the interstate, but we already do, people. If you've been paying attention to some of this talk, and look, I'm not here to beat you up on it. I'm just telling you, I've been trying to pay attention to the whole infrastructure spending. They're talking about adding several layers of hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars more on infrastructure spending, highways and bridges and airports, what's been spent so far, and just add a few more hundreds of millions of dollars in layers over a 6, 8, 10 year period. That's additional spending. You know, when they say $1 trillion, it's all accumulated over several years. But it makes me a bit uneasy, friend, that not a single one of these politicians, policy wonks, none of these talking heads, and all the time that they waste on cable television, filling cable televisions with
irrelevant interviews about the royal family or, I don't know, political analysts that got caught with their pants down doing something they shouldn't be doing to the eyes of everyone watching on Zoom. All this time that they waste, when are they going to, you know, I was complaining early about the so-called mainstream media not concentrating on the number one problem in our country, the open and porous border, where it seems like it's on the immigration issue, it's Black Friday. It's a rush through the door. Let's get in there as quickly as possible before all these opportunities for us to stay dry up. The other issue, amigo, is cybersecurity in our country. I haven't heard anyone. I haven't seen a panel. And look, maybe I'm on the wrong channel. Maybe I'm wasting my time again with a low-rated, clueless news network, CNN, who's dropped, you know, well below the top five and is keeps sinking like a rock in the ocean. It's a lead balloon at CNN. That's worthless programming. Maybe I'm wasting my time there. Maybe over at MSNBC. I don't know. Maybe they set down some nerds and we're talking about cybersecurity. The information superhighway should be priority spending when it comes to highway spending in our country to protect our critical systems for water, for power, everything in our, but everything that helps run our country. I haven't heard a single one. Have you? Well, Vladimir Putin in the news saying, yeah, we're ready to extradite cyber criminals to your country. You prosecute them. Now you send me your cyber criminals over here. I don't know, but I suspect that the Russian cyber criminals, I don't know, they might even be happy to come here and spend some time in a federal who's got. And compared to where our cyber criminals would go to Russia, some gulag, God only knows what type of treatment they would receive. Yeah, I think the Russian criminals probably get the better end of it. Do you know why Vladimir Putin is talking with Joe Biden? You guys recall a few days back how the U.S. was somehow instrumental, gave its blessing. Joe Biden, you know, the same Joe Biden that destroyed thousands of jobs for the Keystone XL pipeline, thousands of good paying union jobs with that Keystone XL pipeline, you know, Canada down to Houston, export some of that Canadian petrol to the world. You know, that one pipeline, thankfully, it's just one pipeline of thousands of other branches across our nation. If you've never seen the map of the energy pipelines in our country, you should just do a DuckDuckGo search. Don't do a Google. You know me, I keep telling you, don't do Google search. Don't give Google any eyeballs. You're the product that Google sells. Do a DuckDuckGo search. That's the engine, DuckDuckGo. And put the words in there like map of U.S. petrol pipeline or map of U.S. oil and gas pipelines. It's amazing to see the skeleton all across the country from, and there's a, that skeleton is rich with all sorts of tentacles up northeast and on the east coast where, you know, where there's the massive population, the concentration population of our nation concentrates on the east coast. What is it? The tentacles, the branches, it's amazing all across our country. That was just one pipeline that Joe Biden got rid of, that Keystone XL. Canada down to Houston by, you know, it was a political gift to those who supported him and they wanted to get rid of Keystone XL, fine. But the same Joe Biden that got rid of Keystone XL and got rid of our jobs and our prosperity and our opportunity and, of course, made the Justin Trudeau mad because, hey, that's a Canadian line down to Houston. Well, the same one was Joe Biden, the same one that somehow was instrumental in helping the Russians, helping Vladimir Putin proceed with something called the Nord Stream 2 pipeline from Russia into Europe. Representative Mike McCall was on ABC's this week, this past weekend, and saying we gave up way too much. And like right now, Joe Biden this Monday, right now, Joe Biden's talking with NATO. And man, I hope on this NATO conversation, I hope he's bringing up the issue of Afghanistan because that's a delicate house of cards that's about to crumble and there's going to be a lot of blood in the streets in Kabul. But I'm going to go back to this issue. Mike McCall commenting on ABC's this week, this past weekend. We gave up too much. And Joe Biden is entering this conversation with Vladimir Putin. The reason Vladimir Putin is sitting down with Joe Biden is because Joe Biden gave his blessing. That's my understanding of it. I correct if I'm wrong, but he gave his blessing to Russia, opening up that Nord Stream 2 pipeline from Russia into Europe. The same Joe Biden that cut our prosperity off and destroyed our jobs, same one who gave, you know, Vladimir Putin and the Russians access to Europe with their pipeline. Ain't that something? Yeah. So who's the Russian agent? Huh? You guys on the left, who's the Russian plant now? Who's doing Vladimir Putin's bidding? U.S. Congressman Mike McCall from Texas saying that was wrong. We're entering these conversations with Vladimir Putin from a position of weakness as a result of what we gave up and the fact that we still need to properly tighten the screws on Vladimir Putin when it comes to penalties for individuals responsible for the Colonial Pipeline hack that shut down gas distribution in our South and Southeast. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You are in tune with The Dana Show from what I refer to as her Southern Command here at the studios of KURV in South Texas. You want to join the conversation? It's 844-344-3262. Stick around. We got some interesting conversations. One of them is an expert cancer fighter with information on mammograms and the COVID vaccine that you should know. I wasn't aware of this. I saw a quick write-up on this and I totally forgot about it. But, I mean, you talk about important news. You know, mammograms are showing false positives after the COVID vaccine. Ain't that amazing? That's one of the conversations coming up. And we'll talk Afghanistan. We got so much information. So keep it tuned right here. From South Texas, I'm Sergio Sanchez, and this is The Dana Show.
Your one-stop shop for the information you need to fight back. If you're going to have to learn stuff, you might as well enjoy it. The Dana Show.
From the Dana Show Southern Command in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, I'm Sergio Sanchez, and it's an honor, friend, to be filling in for Dana Lash. I'll be with you, Lord willing, all week. And you want to join the conversation, you could try to make it by producer Steve at 844-344-3262. Let me check some of the other stuff that's in the news before we do some headlines today. Let's see here. Dun, 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 dun. Vice President Kamala Harris. My goodness. This is one of those moments. I wish we had like a time machine, right? Where you could show, let's say, presidential candidates what they would be saying almost a year into the future. Vice President Kamala Harris saying, there's a lot of misinformation about vaccine safety circulating in our country. Speaking in South Carolina, the Vice President Harris saying that it seems like the vaccines were developed overnight, but they're backed by a decade of research. So much for the Kamala Harris that was the bizarro universe Kamala Harris during the campaign trail that, you know, every chance, I guess she had a chance to comment on the vaccines that were being developed because it was, you know, Donald Trump. Oh, no, she tried to poo-poo that as often as possible. It, you know, ignore the science. Okay, Steve, well, let's do some headlines.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott promising to release more information this week about how the state of Texas is going to build more border wall, as heard right here on The Dana Show last week on Friday. So Governor saying about $1 billion, maybe $1 billion. Now, you calculate based on the current price for a mile of wall, they say that the state of Texas might be able to build an additional 50 miles of wall. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what the governor has to say, give some details. And maybe it doesn't have to be like the wall that's real expensive. Maybe in cooperation with landowners and set up some type of barrier to funnel traffic in a way Border Patrol can pick up illegal immigrants. Amazon is expected to top Walmart as the nation's biggest retailer in 2022, according to J.P. Morgan. Wasabi is this year's best in show, 145th annual Westminster Kennel Club dog show. It's a little cute little, a fluffy little dog. From Southern Command in South Texas, I'm Sergio Sanchez, and this is The Dana Show.
The weird, the unusual, and the hilarious. Check out Dana's Absurd Truth Podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
And I know there are folks out there who aren't saying they won't get the vaccine. What they're saying is they're just not sure. And a lot of that has to do with the misinformation or maybe the lack of correct information. And so people may question the safety and the efficacy of the vaccine. They may have heard things that aren't quite true. So let's speak directly to these issues right now.
Yeah, okay. Welcome to the Dana Show from her Southern Command here in deep South Texas. Still in Texas, still on blessed soil. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and I'll be in for Dana. Lord willing, in for Dana all week long. Dana's taking some much-needed time off. You know, that little cut from Kamala Harris, our vice president. This is too easy. My goodness, it's just too easy. Every single thing that she said, a misinformation, lack of confidence. Yeah, like everything that she was expressing on the campaign trail about a year ago. There's online, because she makes it too easy, because Joe Biden makes it way too easy. There's a little audio cut, video cut. You know, when Kamala Harris went to Central America and she says, don't come. Don't come. You know, tell all these people not to, you know, they're still coming. They ain't going to stop just because Vice President says, you know, don't go to the U.S. southern border. There's this cut of audio and video where, you know, she's all, you know, doing the sign of the cross, and she said, it's not, you know, it's against American values, and these people are running from misery. They're running from violence, and, you know, it's American values. We have to take all these people in, and we have to protect all these people, and it's contrary to our American values. Doing, you know, just being all holier than thou on the campaign trail, criticizing Donald Trump, and they need to come, and we need to accept all these people. Da, 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 da. And then they pan over to, you know, what she said in Central America. Don't come. Don't come. She makes it too easy. I'm looking forward to some of you guys have all the extra time to take everything that she poo-pooed about the vaccine, all the misinformation, the lack of confidence that she generated, that she created by criticizing this warp speed effort under Donald Trump. What she created, the misinformation, the distrust that she seeded during the campaign trail, and then go, oh yeah, you got it already. It might be you, Steve, then maybe you can put the video on YouTube. So let's do comparison and contrast real quick. So this is Kamala Harris seeding this misinformation and lack of confidence in the vaccine. Go ahead,
so
Steve.
So let's just say there's a vaccine that is approved and even distributed before the election. Would you get it?
Well, I think that's going to be an issue for all of us. I will say that I would not trust Donald Trump.
Oh, my goodness.
And it would have to be a credible source of information.
Oh, my goodness. And if you have the other one, I don't mean to move too fast, Steve, but I know you got it. Yeah, let's do the compare and contrast 1 year and change later. Play the other cut you just opened up here at the beginning of this little set. Yeah,
because we know this is a big issue. And I know there are folks out there who aren't saying they won't get the vaccine. What they're saying is they're just not sure.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with the misinformation.
Yeah, a lot of that has to do with you, Madam Vice President. My goodness. It's too easy. It's politically speaking, not that I'm, look, I'm just saying, it's a saying. It's shooting fish in a barrel. Politically speaking, okay, I'm not advocating for anything. Seriously, that's an American saying. My goodness. Bibi Netanyahu is out as prime minister in Israel. And the new prime minister will be, has been sworn in already, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. So who is he? Background, what do you know? Is he a lib? Is he conservative? Right of center? Is he going to dismantle the Israeli state and give it back to the world and the Palestinians? Or are we looking at an even more conservative politician than Bibi Netanyahu? We've called up our friend, a foreign policy pro and international man of mystery, Stephen Yates. He'll be joining us next hour for that conversation.
Let me share a little bit more news. Well, I'm actually running out of time. I'll save these headlines for a little later. I can say, though, that I'm sending out a big hug and a kiss to producer Kane, my brother from another mother, but the same Heavenly Father up in North Texas. I was reminded of Kane by this story, New Orleans French Quarter, the Bear As You Dare event. This past week, and they had hundreds and hundreds of buck naked, barely clothed cyclists pedaling through the New Orleans French Quarter, 13th annual event. Kane was looking forward to participating this year in that event, but he was in a bad car accident, and well, maybe next year, buddy, maybe next year. He saved a lot of eyeballs and a lot of lunch by not going up there and participating. Okay, so let me share some serious information with you. I had a conversation with an expert who's been on the front lines of fighting cancer. Did you know that, women, listen up. Y'all get the vaccine, right? After you get the vaccine, did you know that you might register? You go get a mammogram, you might register a false positive. Go ahead, Steve-O.
Lily Shockney is a registered nurse, is on the National Breast Cancer Foundation Medical Advisory Council, and I understand has worked tirelessly to improve the care of breast cancer patients. And Lily, I appreciate you giving us time today. Now, I bring you aboard the program because I saw this headline that, I just gravitated toward it when I noticed that the COVID vaccine reportedly is throwing some mammogram results off. And you got doctors and nurses telling women, still come in and get those mammograms despite this blip, this mistake that's taking place right now. How bad is it, Lily? How many patients are we talking about, percentage-wise, that have this error reading on their mammograms?
Well, at least 80 to 90% are going to have a false positive if, in fact, they're getting their mammogram, their annual mammogram, done within a couple weeks of having gotten the COVID-19 vaccine.
Wow. Why, Lily? Why? What's going on?
So it's all about timing, the timing of when to get the COVID-19 vaccine and when to get the screening mammogram done. Unless a woman has clearly got signs that she may have breast cancer, which is going to be a hard lump in her breast, inverted nipple that's new, clear nipple discharge, not milky or not bloody, but actually clear nipple discharge, enlargement of the pores in the skin of her breast, or a rash on her breast are things that we certainly want people to pay attention to and to come in no matter what so that we can do an evaluation. But if they don't have any of those symptoms and they are coming in for their routine screening mammogram, we really do want them to time it in relationship to the vaccine. So when you get the COVID vaccine, whether it be your first dose or your second dose, your body's immune system is turned on. And we want that to happen. That's how you get protection from getting COVID-19 virus in the future. So when you get injected, many women will say, gee, my arm is a little bit swelled right here. It's even red where the injection site was. What they don't realize is that literally within a day or two, the lymphatic system, and we have thousands of lymph nodes in our body, including those underneath of our arm, and they will be reactive nodes. So those nodes will get firmer and enlarge some. So if you're getting a mammogram within 4 to 6 weeks of getting your first or your second dose of the COVID vaccine, when that mammography tech does a good job, she's going to be capturing in the upper outer quadrant of the breast, which is the closest to your underarm, a little section of that underarm. And on there, those nodes are going to look enlarged and look like trouble, because a reactive node looks very similar to a cancerous node. So what happens? Now they say, oh, gee, we need to do a biopsy. Let's get a breast MRI because we didn't find any tumor in your breast, but it must be in there somewhere. Now let's get a PET CT scan to see if the cancer has already spread. And in the meantime, we're scaring 10 years of her life off of her. And we're doing a lot of tests for which she'll have co-payments and deductibles as well, only to find that it's a false positive. So I'm telling women, if you don't have symptoms of a breast problem, then make sure that if you've already gotten your COVID vaccines, you're waiting until 4 to 6 weeks after that second dose. Otherwise, you're going to be in that big group where they're going to try to chase down something.
Okay.
I was hoping that most mammography facilities would train their schedulers when scheduling a patient to ask the question, have you had a COVID vaccine? When was it done? Let me then book you for 4 to 6 weeks after your second dose and not sooner than that. But what I'm finding is that that's not the case.
No,
so,
and Lily Sockney is with the National Breast Cancer Foundation Medical Advisory Council. Again, the COVID vaccine reportedly throwing off some of these mammogram results. Like within a 2 week period after receiving the vaccine, we're getting some false positives. I mean, as shocking, Lily says, about 80% plus false positives 2 weeks after the vaccine. Lily, is this all vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, or is it just one brand of vaccine?
We do believe that it's all of them, but particularly Pfizer and Moderna because of the mRNA and the way that it works. And your immune system gets kicked on in less than 24 hours after getting the dose. So if you say, well, I'm going to get my COVID vaccine this morning and I'll get my mammogram tomorrow, you're already at risk of having a false positive. I don't want any woman skipping her mammogram. I just want it to be scheduled at the time that is right. We had to postpone mammograms in 2020. Across the country, there were very few screening mammograms done. So if a woman does have something going on in her breast, that means that we've had another year for it to go on a little bit more. And we don't want her being frightened to come in to get a mammogram because of COVID. Women can feel confident that every mammography facility is doing all the right steps and following the CDC guidelines to keep her safe. And the more people that get vaccinated, then the less worry going forward we're going to have. So I do hope that women do get vaccinated, but the timing of that screening mammogram needs to be the right time, 4 to 6 weeks after that second dose.
Now that time, 4 to 6, y'all are fairly confident over at Cancer Research, that's a good marker. That's a good calendar. Okay.
It's been proven to be a very good marker. Correct.
How long have we known this, Ms. Sockney?
Well, I've known it for about 6 or 7 months, but I'm finding as I get emails from women across the country, I also work at Johns Hopkins in the Breast Center as I'm a professor of surgery, that women are not being told about this. They're just finding me on the internet, will write me and say, oh my gosh, I think I've got breast cancer. They can't find the primary in my breast. They've just done a biopsy of 3 lymph nodes in my armpit, and am I going to die?
Oh, my goodness.
And the first thing I say is, what I write back is, when did you get your vaccine? and so it's always, you know, if I could get a nickel for every time that I asked that question and predicted the answer, I'd be pretty wealthy at this point.
Lily, that is just so sad. Look, this is the first time I read about this. For this not to have been broadcast at a much higher level, top of the hour news with the networks, I am just beyond shocked. I'm hoping it gets the attention of some of these decision makers who decide very few tidbits, 2 minute vignettes of information that are dispensed to the national audiences. They need to be talking about stuff like this. And I'm hoping this is the start.
Well, thank you for talking about it.
Thank you, Lily. Yeah, well, at least we got our audience aware of this. Lily Sockney, appreciate your time. Please call us back anytime.
Thank you.
This is The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez in for Dana this week. Appreciate you tuning in. We got Florida man just around the corner. A cute story from Miami Beach. Lamborghini versus a scooter. You'll be surprised who won that race. Well, after all, it's Florida, right? 844-344-3262 from her Southern Command in South Texas. You are in tune with The Dana Show.
The Dana Show, sponsored by 30 years of game-changing Kel-Tec innovation, like the P50, a new breed of pistol. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec.
I'm Sergio Sanchez in for my friend Dana Lash from The Dana Show, Southern Command. Let's see. We got Florida man coming up in just a little bit. There's some news related to Afghanistan that they're talking about on just making the rounds on Twitter.
Pentagon planning to pull airstrike support. Remember how they had announced a few days back that they were going to provide airstrike support? Well, the Pentagon, I see this moving on Twitter, reportedly planning to pull airstrike support from Afghanistan after U.S. troops leave. Voice of America, U.S. Central Command will only carry out counterterrorism strikes if they pose a serious threat to the homeland. That'd be us, right? So General Frank McKenzie also telling Voice of America that his force size in the Middle East was now closer to 40,000. Steve, let me do an audio check. You still got me, right? You're good? Okay, excellent. I heard something funky over the headphones. Before Florida, man, see, not everybody's in Florida is, you know, we got crazies all over the place. So let me go to my hometown. Which, you know, I was born in McAllen, but as a teenager, you know, it is when you're a teenager. Usually that's your hometown. That'd be Houston. So this one's from Conroe. Little League umpire in the news, taken into custody. Several charges. Running from a traffic stop this past weekend in Conroe, Texas. That's a nice place. Police said that they tried to pull over this 35-year-old Little League baseball umpire. Ramsey LaFont, his name, led them on a chase to a sports complex where he was scheduled to umpire a ball game. Mr. LaFont was in his ump's uniform when the father, one of the kids, one of the ball players, tackled him. As he ran from police. Man, you talk some of the incident with scar kids for life, right? Officers found 6 grams of crystal meth and arrested Mr. LaFont, evading arrest, drug possession, credit card abuse charges in Houston as well. And in fact, I think this story is more interesting than the Florida man one coming up. But anyway, background checks, people, background checks, and all the people working for Little League. All right, Steve, let's do some Florida Man.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Okay, Lamborghini and a scooter. Which one's going to win? Well, because it is Florida, you know the scooter's got to win, right? 14-year-old thief, alleged thief, let me say that. 14-year-old boy tried to steal a $200,000 Lamborghini. The luxury SUV's owners. The owner hopped on a scooter to chase after this kid. WSVN-TV has the full report. One of the neighbors caught up to the kid. The kid told the neighbor, I stole a Lamborghini just now. I don't have a license. I can't drive. The kid's 14 years old. The neighbor told the kid, just turn yourself in. You know, it'll be better if you do that, kid. I think that this kid didn't know how to shift gears. I don't think he knows how to drive stick. Like, who does nowadays, right? But that's probably why he only drove it like a couple of blocks. He was probably on neutral. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You are listening to The Dana Show from her Southern Command in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas.
And we even have now. But I want to make it clear. NATO is critically important for U.S. interests in and of itself. If there weren't one, we'd have to invent one.
Joe Biden, and there's some, I was going to say sweet audio cuts. Actually, it's more like embarrassing audio cuts. I got another one coming. That was Joe Biden before the NATO powwow summit with NATO friends. You know, a year ago, you know, we had a different president, a different attitude, a different perspective from NATO when it came to the U.S., vice versa. A president a year ago. Welcome to hour three of the Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez from South Texas or Southern Command. You want to join the conversation, 844-344-DANA. A year ago, we had a different leader in our country. We had a leader. In my opinion, a year ago, we had a real president, a real leader, someone who demanded that NATO allies and friends, that they pay their, you know, fair share, their so-called fair share. There's a certain allocation of GDP that needs to be set aside by all these NATO countries and supporting this alliance, you know, trying to counter the power of Russia, the former Soviets and now Russia. And now we have a vacuum. in the White House. Now we have a country that has propped weekend at Bernie's, weekend at Biden's. It was embarrassing, amigo. I don't know about you, but just of the few video and audio cuts that made it into circulation on YouTube and Twitter, and it's out there. It's really embarrassing. For me as an American, it is embarrassing, friend. I don't know about you. Maybe you think Joe Biden is like the greatest president ever, that you've got a long list of somehow that you have invented and you fantasize of all the wonderful things that Joe Biden has accomplished and what he is doing, and he's the best president ever. Maybe you're one of those. I'd like to see what it is that you're fantasizing about, because I'm funny. I check Twitter, check Facebook and social media. I don't see anyone posting any of Joe Biden's earth-shattering, unexpected accomplishments. This guy's an abject failure. And he is supposed to be the leader of our country, by extension, the leader of the free world. But a year ago, we had a president. And we did have more of a tense relationship with friends at the G7, friends at NATO, allies. We had a leader in this country that demanded that they pay up for their defense. A reason why our country should be paying for the military defense of Germany and France and Europe and what time Western Europe. There's no reason for that. They all need to be paying their, so-called fair share of that. We had a leader back then. So you guys pony up for that. You guys pony up for NATO. Now we've got somebody stumbling, bumbling his way to the finish line at the G7, for example. Now over at NATO, he was making those comments about NATO. Did you guys see last week? I don't know if maybe Dana commented on that, but I was shaking my head when I saw that Pew Research Center poll of 16 countries, which I found comical. I was laughing. I was laughing hard when I saw this news write-up. Nonpartisan survey in 16 countries. Like, I'm sorry, I didn't know that Republicans and Democrats existed in other countries. What does party have to do with this? Pew Research Center poll last week, 16 countries found that over 6 in 10 residents in each of those countries said that they have confidence that Joe Biden would do the right thing in global affairs, that the U.S. image worldwide was rebounding under Joe Biden. What do you expect, friend? We've gone from having a leader to, in effect, being leaderless. We've got G7 nations. We've got NATO nations that are, in essence, chuckling and laughing at Joe Biden, and by extension, laughing at us. You guys who voted for Joe Biden, you guys who voted against Donald Trump, the damage, you have voted against our own self-interest. You have voted against our country. You have voted against our children and our future by, in effect, placing this weekend at Biden's, propping up this cartoonish, comical figurehead that everybody's snickering and laughing at, as apologizing because he's going to get in trouble with his staff. I saw one little piece of audio my wife showed me this morning. I was getting ready for work, and she showed me the sycophant press pool. Who are these reporters who were following him around the G7? I didn't hear any serious questions from these individuals. It was Jill Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, who had to whisk Joe Biden away because, Uncle Joe, it's more like Grandpa Joe is being tempted. He's following like a bug, following the light. Oh, there's a light. There is a light. He's going toward the cameras and said, Joe, come over here. Okay. They all start guffawing. They start laughing, the press pool, because Joe Biden has to shepherd, guide Grandpa away from the pool of reporters. That's embarrassing, amigo. We have no leader. And no wonder over in Europe, because Trump is gone, and because now the European nations, whether it's the NATO alliance
or the G7 or the EU, you name it. They're now back in control. They now are the ones who they think they have a say because they got rid of Donald Trump. And you've got a foreign press, a sycophant foreign press, these same fools that were laughing at Joe Biden as Joe Biden was taking him away from the reporters. They went from demonizing Donald Trump every single day. No wonder Donald Trump always had bad press and Europeans had the wrong perspective on Donald Trump because Donald Trump was for America. Donald Trump was for Americans. And the U.S. press and the foreign press a year ago, this time constantly influencing. I mean, how else can I describe it? Influencing the European and the U.S. feeble-minded. He's a racist. He's a xenophobe. Harsh words. Donald Trump treating his friends like enemies. Donald Trump is a leader. The leader of America, by extension, the leader of the free world, telling everybody, get in line. It's time to make the U.S. strong, and you guys get strong as well. And you guys pony up for your defense. And I'm not surprised that the Pew Center was setting out this pablum last week, a U.S. image worldwide rebounding under Joe Biden. Joe Biden is an empty suit now more than ever. What is that cut? Let me see what cut that is. Cut 8, Steve-O. Joe Biden. Looks like he's just fumbling, stumbling his way to the finish line over the G7. Libya versus Syria. He couldn't figure out the difference. Go ahead, Steve-O.
We could work together with Russia. For example, in Libya, we should be opening up the passes to be able to go through and provide food assistance and vital assistance to a population that's in real trouble. I think I'm going to try very much hard to. And by the way, there's places where. I shouldn't be starting off and negotiating in public here.
My goodness. Oh, well. What can I tell you? Look, pray for him. You guys who pray, seriously. I know some of y'all probably yelling at me right now, maybe punching the radio. But you're a believer. You just pray for the man. That's all you can do. Pray for this man. Pray that God give him wisdom and strength. And I hope he holds out for the next, 3 years and 5 months until he can be replaced. I don't want Kamala Harris at the White House. Kamala Harris, seriously, the way she's run the border czar duties that she's in charge of, can you imagine our country under Kamala Harris? God give Joe Biden strength and wisdom the next several years. Bibi Netanyahu is out as Israeli Prime Minister. Naftali Bennett has been sworn in. You stick around. I've got a conversation with our foreign policy friend, foreign policy pro, Stephen Yates, is coming up in just a little bit. I wanted to share with you a story that, embarrassing, is from Texas. Now, it's Austin, Texas, and it's the Austin newspaper. Journalism malpractice. The Austin American Statesman. You see, last Friday, there was this shooting incident. It was a mass shooting incident in Austin. And 14 people were hurt. This morning we updated. We saw that one individual had died as a result of the injuries. But the Austin American Statesman, at a time when they needed to convey to the community on behalf of investigators, on behalf of police, on behalf of police in Austin, who made it very clear who they were looking for. Well, they made it clear they didn't have a name. They only had a description, a general description of who they were looking for. They wanted to simply ask questions of this individual. But because it raised so many different cultural and racist sensitive and culturally sensitive red flags, and they decided to withhold that information, journalism malpractice. They decided to withhold the information that police in Austin had shared to dispense to the community. So anyone, the way this thing rolled out on Friday, in the Austin American Statesman, saying, here's what the editor at the Statesman said. Police have only released a vague description of the suspected shooter as of Saturday morning.
So the Austin American Statesman is not including the description as it is too vague at this time to be useful in identifying the shooter. And such publication could be harmful in perpetuating stereotypes. You know what the police said? Yeah, you can just imagine. Here's what the police had to say. And this is what the paper did not want to say. The suspect or suspects remain at large. It is unknown if there is one or multiple suspects involved. Police in Austin went on to say, there is one suspect described as a black male with dreadlocks, wearing a black shirt and a skinny build. The area will be closed for an extended amount of time to process the crime scene. Investigators are collecting and reviewing camera footage and surveillance video. Black male, dreadlocks, black shirt, skinny build. That is what the Austin American Statesman, at a time when police were investigating, at a time when police likely needed as many eyeballs as possible in the community to keep an eye out for this type of individual and call it in to Crime Stoppers, call it in to 911 to stop this individual and start a conversation, the investigation. At that time, the Austin American Statesman withheld that information because stereotypes, perpetuating stereotypes. Journalism malpractice at its worst, amigo, absolutely worst. You guys at the Statesman, you should be bowing your head in shame. Activists. You're not journalists. You're activists. That's what you are. It's 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez in from The Dana Show Southern Command in South Texas, in for Dana all week. You can join the show at 844-344-DANA.
Red meat, black coffee, truth telling. The Dana Show.
Sounds like lunch with Donald Trump, right? Red meat, some coffee, that's America right there. Welcome to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez in for Dana Lash this week. My buddies, he's taking the week off. So we've got that little birthday song because, well, a little self-serving on my part. Three of my favorite people in the world just celebrated birthdays the past 3 days. First up, my little one, Elam, my CF dude. My little Elam, he's 9 years old. Thank you, Jesus. He's healthy, he's strong. He's a mini Chungus. He's Mr. Chungus. He's gaining weight. He's doing real good. 9 years old, my little Elam. I got him a nice little complicated Lego set. Dude built it like within 2 hours. Boom, just like that. That dude's super smart. My old baby, Noah, my firstborn. His birthday was yesterday. 14 years old. Oh, Jesus. Daly and I were running numbers. This dude's going to be driving like in 2 years. And oh, no, man, he's going to college like in 4 years. So, Lord, please stop the time. It's going by too quick. Noah got an Oculus. You know what that is? It's like a VR set. Or as I call it first, Oculus. It's an Oculus. It's a VR set. So he got a really nice gift. And today, amigo, today, the best president ever in our country, Donald Trump, celebrating 75 years today, 75 years young, is our president, former president. And I pray to Jesus, hopefully sometime in the near future, president again. All right, Steve, well, let's do some headlines.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Bank of America, their CEO, Brian Moynihan, saying that American consumers are spending more than they were prior to the pandemic. Transportation Security Administration, saying the airport screenings averaged 2 million people a day this past weekend. That is the highest since the coronavirus pandemic began. Bitcoin, just under $40,000, two-week high for the cryptocurrency just a few days back. And a different type of fish story. Check this out. A commercial lobster diver in Massachusetts made headlines this past weekend. He claimed to have been briefly gobbled up by a humpback whale. Michael Packard, his name. He says he was in the whale's mouth for about 20 seconds before that big whale spat him out. The new Jonah is from Provincetown, Massachusetts. From her Southern Command in South Texas, you are in tune with The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez. Stick around. We got Stephen Yates talking about power changes in Israel.
When you're stuck discussing politics with your friends, who's the most informed person in the group? Yep, you are. You're welcome. Listen, follow, subscribe.
Take a listen. Mr. President, are you waging a cyber war against America?
Where is the evidence? Where is proof? It's becoming farcical. We know it well. We have been accused of all kinds of things, election interference, cyber attacks, and so on and so forth. And not one time did they bother to produce any kind of evidence or proof, just unfounded accusations.
Yeah, and the follow-up from Vladimir Putin is, okay, you want us to extradite some cyber hacker, cyber terrorist from Russia to the U.S.? Fine. Now, U.S., you guys pick up your cyber black hat nerds and send them over to Russia. Yeah, I read that for you about an hour ago. That's one of the comments from Vladimir Putin. Welcome to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez in for my friend Dana Lash. All week, you got me all week. Lord Jesus, hopefully I'll be here all week with you, and we'll just catch up with the day's news. Yeah, I propose the following, because like I told you earlier, I think that if Russia were to hand the U.S. all the cyber terrorist nerds, compared to a Russian gulag, compared to a Russian jail, oof, they'd be in paradise in a federal holdup. They'd be in paradise in the federal prison. I propose that we triangulate with Mexico. I propose that the U.S. triangulate with Mexico. And any Russian, well, of course, we have to put them in lock in Kyiv, make sure that nobody digs a hole and lets them escape, you know, like El Chapo stuff. But we send them to Mexico, send them to a real jail, a Mexican jail. Let's see if these cyber terrorists, cyber bullies, cyber hackers don't straighten up in Russia, knowing that they'd be going to a real jail in Mexico. All right, so some of the big international news of the day. Bibi's out. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he's no longer prime minister. They've sworn in a new prime minister. Naftali Bennett is his name. So let me bring in a friend of our show, foreign policy pro, and as I lovingly refer to him, international man of mystery, Stephen Yates. How you doing, Steve?
Doing great. Well, great to be with you today.
All right, friend. So where do we start? This parliamentary election system in Israel, I mean, it's so hard for me to wrap my head around it, because they have like how many parties, 8-10 different parties that are jockeying for power in Israel all the time and it seems like forever. In the end, Bibi was able to float to the top, but not this go around. Why not this go around, Steve?
Well, Israel, turns out, is a divided country, something we're very, very familiar with here in the United States. And its electoral system is truly complicated. It might be kind of the highest level, multiple dimension Tetris game ever put together for politics. But in its basic form, it's a parliamentary democracy. You elect party lists and you end up with seats in the legislature, and the majority gets to try to form a government. Israel's been through 4 different elections in the last 2 years, and those results have not allowed the outgoing Prime Minister Netanyahu to be able to form a government and hold it. And so this go around by one single vote. A new, very, very tenuous coalition put together a majority, and they have a plan, they hope, to be able to hold on to that majority going forward. But about all that coalition agrees on is that they wanted to get Prime Minister Netanyahu out of office. Beyond that, it's very, very unclear what they'll be able to do by way of policy or to try to hold them together with some sense of purpose beyond that simple mission.
So they say that with Naftali Bennett, he's more conservative. So what does that mean? Is he more conservative than Benjamin Netanyahu?
Right. Well, it's kind of one of these old adages where I remember early on, and I don't know whether you're even allowed to talk this way anymore, but back in the 80s, we used to have people joke around about you can't be more Catholic than the Pope. And so trying to outflank Netanyahu on...
Which, by the way, you can these days, I understand.
Yeah, as far as I know, the Pope... we'll leave that aside.
Sorry.
When it comes to Netanyahu, yeah, he's carved out the nationalist, national security bedrock of Israeli politics. He also... was very, very willing to speak his mind in what could be termed an Israel first kind of an approach. So he took the kid gloves off when it came to coming to America or other parts of the world. If you were engaged in policy that threatened Israel's existence in his estimation, then he was going to push back. He wasn't going to give you a freebie in public. And that worked when we had a president like Donald Trump, because Donald Trump kind of did the same thing to everybody else. And in a very unusual and unexpected way, support for the United States and our president was at one of its highest levels during the Trump years. And so we're in a big pivot in Israel politics. And it's very unclear what this new leader is going to be able to do with regard to the Iran negotiations and influencing the Biden administration. And that may be what breaks his coalition down.
Okay. Well, my guest right now, a friend of the program, is a Deputy National Security Advisor, one-time advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney. Stephen Yates, our guest, we're talking about Israel, new Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, some of these news reports and the write-ups that I've seen to say he's conservative. Okay, so I'm thinking, then why did they get rid of Bibi Netanyahu? He had some, I don't keep up with Israeli politics. I doubt that the working folks running around town listening right now do as well, but Bibi Netanyahu, did he do himself in some of the legal troubles that he had? Is that what, in the end, did him in?
Well, I'm sure that was used against him. I am not close enough to the brass tacks on the ground in Israel to have a sense for whether there is fire beyond the smoke that was thrown into the system with regard to the allegations. I think, all of us that have been in politics and have been up close to people at the top know that there's always allegations and there's always people trying to stick spaghetti to the wall and see what will stay up there. From my point of view, what this very narrow coalition basically kind of came to an agreement on was that that Prime Minister Netanyahu was probably not the right person from their point of view to deal with a President Joe Biden in the United States. But beyond that, it's unclear to me what Prime Minister Netanyahu did to lose the dominant control he'd had for several years. It's also just a truism in politics. Outside of dictatorships, it's really hard to stay in power for a very long time. And it's only out of this national security impulse that you usually have democratically elected leaders stay in for more than 4, 8, much less 12 years.
Because we have Biden at the White House and, he's no Donald Trump. And I don't think you could describe Joe Biden, a friend of Israel, like Donald Trump. I'm not saying that, he's anti-Israel, not at all. But because Joe Biden is in office, did the Israelis, did they just lurch further right? Because they describe him, this Naftali Bennett, as a conservative, makes me think, well, Israel first. So you have a situation which is, politically speaking, oil and water. It's just different oil this time.
Right. Well, I think you have to look at this coalition in Israel as a patchwork quilt. Don't read too much into the personification of this prime minister, because this coalition was not built around his values, his views, or his tiny party. He was basically like the last acceptable piece of this puzzle to get them over this 50-50 divide that had bedeviled their ability to form a government. And so they made a deal where he, if they stay in government, is prime minister for 2 years, and then a more centrist prime minister from a more quote-unquote mainstream party takes up the next 2 years of the prime ministership. So really, this is just a coalition built around the mechanics of getting Prime Minister Netanyahu out of office. It's not a reflection on an ideological shift in Israel, in my estimation.
Let me ask you about other international stuff. Since President Biden spent the weekend with the G7 friends, and now he's talking with NATO. And I've been checking the Twitter sphere and the news feeds, and I haven't seen really anything related to specifically NATO, because we're not in Afghanistan alone. I mean, NATO's there as well. I haven't seen anything, any comment from NATO nations on what the plan is, because you know it's a house of cards. You know it's going to come crumbling down. There's going to be a bloody mess in the streets of Kabul. I hope there isn't, but you know the Taliban's just chomping at the bit to get back in there. And forgive me for saying it this way, but I mean, start chopping heads. I mean, it's going to be messy. And I have not heard NATO, so-called allies say anything about what Plan B. The only headline that I saw was something that moved about an hour ago that said, you know, the airstrikes. Yeah, there won't be any airstrikes unless it affects us, the homeland. So it's like they backed off on airstrikes after we leave. So anyway, just wanted to get your thoughts on silence from NATO on Afghanistan. We're less than 3 months away from the complete pullout of U.S. forces from Afghanistan.
Yeah, well, there's several things that should be deeply, deeply concerning to any thinking American about NATO. It was historically an incredibly important alliance for the national interests of the United States, but also the direction of the world. However, there are deep questions about how it's funded, how responsibility is shared, and what its mission is. In the post-9/11 world, there was a reframing of that Cold War mission that extended coalition into Afghanistan and the broader Middle East in ways it hadn't really been organized to do. That lasted for so long, and there's so much drift, that there isn't as much support in Europe for the funding. There isn't as much support for these missions. And the United States is adrift on it. At least when you had President Trump engaging in the conversation, whether you supported or opposed his desire to get out of Afghanistan sooner rather than later, he was at least very clear to allies, this is where we're going, and it's going to be on you to increase sorties in or forces in, and we're gonna rely on you acting and sacrificing first before we're called upon to be the world's 9-1-1. There's at least a coherence to that thought. Right now, They're just sitting together, bumping elbows, and celebrating that Joe Biden isn't Donald Trump. That's not a strategy or a mission.
Yeah, and the clock is ticking, and I was hoping to hear something of, okay, well, the Germans will stay there, or other NATO forces will be there and try to prop up the Western government, at least in the capital for a while. But I guess it's not over. Maybe at the end of the day, they'll have some statement on what the plan is with Afghanistan. And I want to get a final thought before I let you go. There was Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, talking about the Wuhan lab. See, it all seems that the suspicion all seems to be moving toward that Wuhan, China lab as releasing, possibly by accident, to the world this COVID virus. And a statement, a flaccid statement from the G7 that, yeah, we want China to cooperate. Yeah, good luck with that. There's no teeth to that. And what would Donald Trump have done different to get China to respond, to open up the lab, to provide blood samples, do something in a real investigation? What do you think Donald Trump would have done different?
Well, in many ways, I think Secretary Pompeo was historic in his role, and it was really unusual to have the secretary and that department tell very compelling truth about what we knew about the origins and culpability of this outbreak. What may never be fully known, but we should be pushing to get at, is how it was created and how it initially broke out. But what is known and is inescapable is that the Chinese government made a deliberate decision to contain it within their country and release it to the world, to manipulate the World Health Organization, and then to use this crisis as a form of political and economic warfare on its adversaries and competitors. That's indisputable. And if we can't get the so-called leaders of the free world to agree that China needs to pay a price, China can't be left off the hook, then there's no point in these summits.
Hear, hear. It was, by the way, Steve, have you texted Donald Trump happy birthday? Have you texted the former president happy birthday today?
I'm pretty sure every day is a good day for Donald Trump. I do wish the president happy birthday.
I know you and him are pretty close, you know, because after all, Dick Cheney, you know, gave you his personal cell number, right? Because they're kind of close. Right?
The two of them, I am not sure what the status of the communication is.
Let's not go there.
I wish them both happiness and health. But the former president's agenda was closer to mine.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. It's always enlightening. I love speaking with you, brother. Stephen Yates, former Deputy National Security Advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney. You're listening to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez in for Dana this week.
Politics, pop culture, and whatever else gets canceled, tossed in a blender, paid for by sponsored hate mail. It's The Dana Show.
Oh, my goodness. I love the new liners. This is the Dana Show from her Southern Command in McAllen, Texas, studios of KURV. I'm Sergio Sanchez. As always, it's an honor and a real pleasure. It's always a lot of fun doing the show on Twitter, or as Dana says, the Twitters. It's at Sergio Talk, and on Facebook, we got to do the whole Twitter Facebook thing because still waiting on a former president, Donald Trump. Which, by the way, happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy 75th birthday, Donald Trump today, 75 years old. Still waiting on President Trump and the billionaire amigos to create some online competition. Let me clear the deck of some of the other new stuff for the day. Researchers at Yale looking at the effect of summer warmer temperatures on COVID. So the write-up is in Nature Communication. They say anything above 68 degrees, high humidity, more sun, more UV radiation leads to moderately lower number of new infections. As much as we are done, still people being infected out there with COVID. And I mention this because a little bit of personal sadness. A dear friend of mine, he lost his dad this past weekend. And his dad was a strong man, strong individual, very active man from what I saw. Very smart, active man. But it's still out there, people. Just be smart. You're going to get the vaccine. Don't delay. Go get it. If you're not, it's fine. Just be smart. Vitamin D3, ramp it up. Vitamin C, just take care of yourself. Wash your hands. Just be careful. It's still out there. I still believe it's a Chinese lab-produced thing. Steve-O, if you've got some like stupid audio today, just give me a warning and we can go to that. Okay. So I'll pitch back to you, Steve, so we can do the stupid audio today. Go ahead.
All right, no problem. Joe Biden was out there talking and he had a brain fart. Sorry.
Where we could work together with Russia, for example, in Libya. We should be opening up the passes to be able to go through and provide food assistance.
When did they provide food assistance in Libya? You mean Syria? Syria, right? That's what he's talking about. fumbling his way to the finish line. There you go. There's the empty suit that is Joe Biden, the president of the United States and the leader of the free world. No wonder European nations so happy. They got him now. They can run the show. There we go. See you tomorrow on The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez from Southern Command, The Dana Show.